For more information on the Lynch series, visit our website at moviegeeksunited.net/Lynch series.
Now it's dark.
Welcome to the Lynch series, an ongoing collection of interviews designed to celebrate and explore the films of David Lynch. In this episode, we speak with Toby Keeler. Mr. Keeler was a childhood friend of Mr. Lynch. He assisted on the set of Eraserhead, and he directed the documentary Pretty as a Picture, The Art of David Lynch. How did you first come to meet David Lynch?
Well, I guess the story goes it was in the front yard of a girl, David's girlfriend, at age 15. And, I guess he was on the way out and I was on the way in. But we met there and... I think the first day he asked me, what my father did, and I told him he was a painter.
Right.
And that kind of changed everything. And, we became fast friends and, went through high school together. And mm-hmm. over the years, we lost contact, but, came together again. And it's, it's a long time, man, since 1960.
Yeah, it's a long relationship.
1960,
that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't he say that you stole his girlfriend, too, at the time? That
I don't know if he put it that way. But that was the point of contact, was a lovely young lady named Linda.
Right.
And was there in Alexandria, Virginia. And, like I said, we were in the same high school fraternity, and... there's some good stories back from those times.
Yeah. Now, Dave, I had read interviews with Mr. Lynch where he actually said that he had never considered that you could actually make a career out of being an artist until he got to know your stepfather. And that was the big epiphany for him and what ultimately drove him to pursue it as a career. That's correct?
Well, I think that's true. Both he and Jack Fisk.
Yeah.
When you're 15, you're kind of don't know where you're going. At least most people don't. But David was one guy who had a direction, and he'd rather paint than go out with the guys.
Yeah.
And he actually rented his first studio from Bushnell, my stepdad.
Yeah.
There in Alexandria, I think it was off Henry Street, and then he had another one on Cameron Street later. And, I remember those days, I remember them well. I remember the night that Kennedy was lying in state in the Capitol, and, we were up in David's studio having a couple of beers, and we decided, let's go down and look at the casket lying in state in the Capitol Rotunda. So we jumped in Dave's family car and headed into town, and, of course, the lines went from the Capitol down to 16th Street and then back again, and we stood in line all night long, with blankets wrapped around us to keep us warm. This was, obviously in November.
Right.
And I remember one person in line commenting that he said, "Are you brothers?" And I said, "Well, no, but David said we're from the same tribe."
Didn't David usher at JFK's inauguration?
Well, I think he did, actually. He was an Eagle Scout.
Right.
And that may have been when he was still in the Boy Scouts. I didn't know that. But I think, he has the story where he was, in the outside of the White House, and he saw the limousine pulling out with, you know, with three living presidents. You know, was Kennedy and Nixon and Johnson.
Mm. Wow. Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about his background and get your take on something. He was born in Montana, and he moved around a lot. And his father was a agricultural research scientist, and his mother was an English tutor, I believe.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
And it seems like a painfully kind of normal upbringing. So what is it about, your take on it, these kind of normal origins that he had that inform his work as an artist and a filmmaker?
Wow, that's a really good question. You know, David is about, I mean, despite what people might think of his work, is, I mean, besides being extremely bright and intuitive, you know, he's about as normal a guy as you'd ever want to meet. You know, he laughs a lot. You know, he always has. You know, I mean, I remember one summer David had needed a merit badge for Eagle Scouts for community service, and at the time there was a kind of a fad of running around the neighborhood and stenciling people's house numbers onto the side of the curb for, I think we charged a buck or something like that, and you know, so David saw a great opportunity to, you know, to make a little money and get his merit badge, you know, credit at the same time. But as to answer your question, you know, it's, I don't know where it comes from.
Yeah, because it seems like such an idyllic kind of upbringing that he had, and you see his films, and you know, obviously there's a lot of emotion and power and love in his films as well, but they're pretty dark. So I guess that's the bulk of the question, is where that kind of comes from.
Well, pretty dark is a good way to put it.
that is.
To be sure. But, you know, with David, it, you know, it always is and always has been, you know, about, you know, the idea.
Right.
And you know, here's a guy, you know, that falls in love all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's a piece of furniture or a painting, you know, or a film, you know, and with him, it's all about being, you know, true to the idea.
Yeah.
And I guess that's a, you know, I mean, you know, Midwestern folks, you know, have a tendency to kind of be straight shooters, and you know, David is a straight shooter, and. You know, I think he likes to evoke mood, and you know, of course, darkness is one way of doing that.
Yeah.
But when you hang around the guy, you know, he'll tell stories that'll have you on the floor doubled over with laughter. There's no darkness in his life at all.
Well,
that I can see. I mean, you know.
Well, I want to talk to you about the documentary you made of David Lynch. It's called "Pretty as a Picture: The Art of David Lynch." One of the high points of it for me was the kind of reunion of sorts that took place at the original location where Eraserhead was filmed.
Yeah.
Now, you were a part of that production back in the 70s. I know it was a very arduous, slow production that took about 7 years to complete, I believe. How present were you during that time, and what memories stick out for you the most from that shoot?
Well, you know, I moved out here in 72, so I think David was already at the AFI, and I think he's probably already starting Eraserhead. You know, our contact was initiated by the fact that, you know, I called him, and he basically needed some crew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had Fred and Catherine and Jack and some other folks, Charlotte and the gang down there, you know, working, you know, all through the night and sleeping during the day. And you know, he needed some help for the man in the planet scene. and he needed some characters for the fighting man scene, which I appear in. And it's not just myself. Dolores, my wife, and my two kids, Jennifer and Brad, although I think he may have cut them out, but they are there in the credits as well. You know, it was just, you know, it was great to see an old friend. And, you know, I'd never, you know, I came out here to go to Cal Arts, and here was a great opportunity to come down and, you know, see an old friend, you know, working on his film project.
So how much time did you spend with him on the set for that project?
Well, you know, a couple of days, maybe, that's all. You know, over a period of time, I think there was another scene where the fetuses drop out of the sky on a stage. I forget where that scene comes, but you know, what else can you say? Fetuses
right.
dropping out of the sky like rain.
That's all there
is. It's been in so many movies since then. That
yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. At this point, you know.
But you know, I'll never forget. You know, the after all those years, I mean, the film was dark, went dark for a number of years. You know, while David was either out of money or you know, doing something else. And I know, you know, some scenes that he shot with Jack Nance were, you know, like separated by like 5 years.
Mm.
And you know, he was concerned that Jack would be able to match, but they, you know, it's seamless. And he was working with Alan Splett at the time, and I'll never forget the night they had the screening at the AFI, you know, cast and crew screening. And you know, David's not one; he doesn't like being in the theater when his stuff's being shown.
Right.
At least he used to be that way. I don't know if he's gotten over it or not, but you know, he likes to kind of sneak out. And and it was a double system, so it was, everything was still kind of, you know, timed and all that. And the film came to an end, and it didn't have any music at the end, and it just went to black.
Mm-hmm.
And there was silence, and there was more silence, and then people kind of just started getting up, and there was more silence. And they started walking out of the theater, and David thought everybody hated it. And, you know, we all kind of assembled in the room next door for some refreshments, and it was only then that, you know, people started, you know, that David found out that, oh, indeed, the opposite was true, that people were just completely spellbound by seeing this. I mean, we all knew at the time that, you know, here is cinematic genius at work. And you know, it's still, you know, without a doubt, I think it's still my favorite David Lynch picture. That, and I think Blue Velvet is probably
right.
My
yeah,
next.
I'm sure that they felt that they had never seen, which they hadn't. They had never seen anything like it before. And that's the one thing about David Lynch's films; they're not derivative of other films. You definitely have not seen them ever before.
Well, seen or heard.
Right.
You know, David has always been really, you know, picky about the sound, and rightfully so. You know, because it's there's two senses working here.
Right.
Know,
I wanted to ask you about that too, because there's a section of your documentary that shows David in the studio with Angelo Badalamenti.
Yeah.
Longtime composer.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about his use and his understanding of music and sound?
Well, you know, David, you know, when we were in high school, you know, he played the bongos.
Mm-hmm.
David's got the fastest fingers of anybody alive, man. He can fly on a set of bongos and congas, you know, like you just wouldn't believe. But I'm not sure that he reads music. He just understands it, and when he hears it and he sees it, he knows, because he's so true to the idea, that he knows when it's right and when it's not.
Right.
And Angelo and he are kindred spirits in that regard. I mean, there's a one of my favorite sequences in Pretty as a Picture is where they're working together in the studio in New York. You know, working out an idea, And you know, David comes up with a couple of notes, and Angela will play them out, and you know, and they'll work on it, and that's basically the way it sort of comes together.
Yeah, perfect creative partners, in a way.
Right.
Well, yeah, they are, and you know, they're both great guys. I mean, you know, Angela was most, I mean, you know, the soundtrack for my show, you know, basically was the soundtrack, a lot of outtakes from Lost Highway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I went over, was privileged to go over and watch being recorded in Prague.
Well, it does take place during the shooting of Lost Highway, your documentary.
Yeah.
So what kind of observations did you make about the way he controls a set and he works his whole creative process in general?
Well, you know, the people that David gets around him, you know, the sense of team and the sense of togetherness, and you know, they all understand where David wants to go, and you know he's not, you know, an auteur in any stretch of the imagination. Anybody that has, you know, a good idea, David's open to listen. He's a big believer in fate, and if there's a mistake that happens on the set, you know, by golly, he'll jump on that, and you know, that's wonderful, you know. And so he's always open, and the people that he gets around him, you know, I think you know, that sort of comes through, you know, the first AD and Peter Deming, and you know, the actors. You know, David is so easygoing and so relaxed. And he loves what he's doing so much that it just kind of rubs off on everybody, and everyone is just having a blast.
Yeah.
Like David says, he said, you know, when you start the production process, he says, it's like being swept away. You know, the production starts, and you know, you're just in the flow.
Right.
And you know, you've got the script and you've got the idea, and the you do whatever it takes to be true to the idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been the idea with David.
I would think as an actor, it would be incredibly freeing in a way to perform in a David Lynch film. And you interviewed several actors from the Lost Highway set. And what was their general impression of that whole experience of being directed by him?
Well, they love him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what's his name? The guy plays Mr. Eddie.
Robert Loggia
compared him to John Huston, for crying out loud.
Wow.
I mean, you know, compliments like that just don't come out of someone like Loggia.
Right.
And I'll never forget, I was trying to get a rough cut together of the documentary, and I went over and showed it to David. And after watching it, he said, "Tobe, you know what you got to do? You got to take all of these sequences and you put each one of them on a 3x5 card, and you take that stack of cards and you throw it up in the air and you let it fall down and you pick them all up and you edit that." I said, "Okay, Dave." And so I, you know, and of course I got started on it. But then what it did was it gave me fresh eyes.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't actually edit the whole thing together, but I started down a new way, and it made me see things differently. This is the effect this guy has on the people around him.
Wow.
He trusts. He has immense trust in the people that he has around him.
Yes. You mind if we take a phone call?
Not at all.
Let me see. 301 area code. You are on. Go ahead. 301. Okay, 301 is not there.
Oh, okay.
Perhaps 817 will be.
Okay.
817 area code. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys. This is John with the Dead Air Show.
Hey, John.
I just wanted to, you know, call in real quick and just say, you know, because of David Lynch, a big influence on my life, I've never, ever, ever had to take any acid. And it's a great feeling to know that I can say, you know, I was drug-free in my teenage years because I didn't need it. I was able to have my mind, you know, opened up and, get to see other weird things without actually having to take drugs. Thanks to David.
That's a great point.
That is a very good point, John.
Thanks
it's
very
not
much.
A backhanded compliment at all. It's actually a big compliment. Lynch is a visionary, and I'm glad that you guys are paying tribute to him. So you guys have a great show.
Thank you so much, John.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye now.
The strange thing is that, you know, some of the best David Lynch movies can be far more haunting than some of the scariest drug experiences out there.
That's true.
That's very true.
They stick with you for years.
Toby, how do our listeners purchase your film?
Well, I think it's available through Image Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be available through David's website. I mean, you know, it's been out for 10 years now.
Yeah.
I mean, they can get it. I guess directly from me. But Image has the DVD.
Okay.
And that's probably the best way to do it. Gone up in flames.
shot me.